My friend Patrick has had a non-linear career path. I wanted to have him on the show, and I heard just a little bit more about the pivot he took in his career to get to where he is today. He's a copywriter, he's a writer. In this conversation, we get to dig into all the twists and turns that his career has taken him, as well as geek out a little bit on creative work and the discipline of getting in the chair and putting the time in to make creative work, how you have to be in the right place in order for the inspiration to strike, not the other way around. It's just a really fun conversation. You're in for a treat here today. Welcome to the Meaning Movement podcast. We know you want to build a stress-free life and business that gives you the financial freedom and lifestyle that you want. In order to do that, you have to eliminate the conflict between your work and the rest of your life. But the problem is, running a business is hard and requires sacrifice and commitment, leaving you feeling depleted, exhausted, and even burned out. But we believe that every entrepreneur deserves to recapture the motivation and energy they need to run their business. And that is what this show is all about. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, and let's go. Patrick, welcome to the Meaning Movement podcast. I'm so pumped to have you on the show. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
The question I like to begin with is, how do you begin to talk about the work that you do in the world?
That's a good question. The first thing I try and do is remind myself to not nerd out about the finer points of writing copy, for whether it's for a business or a book.
Yes.
Because then I can see people's eyes kind of glaze over, you know.
Yes. I do
like to frame it as, hey, I wrote a couple books, and then I try and give somebody a book, and then they look at me and go, why are you giving me this book?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
I love it.
And then it's I think, like a lot of people who write, it's, well, here's what I do to make a living writing, and here's what I really enjoy, and they live together, and you know, maybe the P&L on the book is terrible, but that's why, you know, I have these clients that I write stuff for, and that's how I pay my mortgage. So, yeah,
love it.
It's usually something like that.
I love it. And that's such a good just entry point into, you know, I think why so many people listen to this show, because they're thinking about these things too, of like, oh, I love doing this. I want to do more of it. Is it one thing or do I do two things? And sometimes they feel like we feel weird about it. It's like, I don't like that I have to call myself multiple things and wear different hats. And so, yeah, I just appreciate you just jumping right into the heart of the challenge of this whole world.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, and it took me a long time. I mean, I didn't start calling myself a writer literally until like 20 months ago.
Yeah, well, I want to hear that. So, I want to hear that story. Let's just maybe just to start. If there's more to it than that, what is your relationship with being a writer? What does that look like? Where did that emerge?
Well, I can tell you that I graduated from high school and college with the firm belief that I couldn't be a writer because nobody makes any money being a writer. And yep. this is not untrue. Thus the book work and thus the work, right?
Yes.
So I kind of spent a long, long time, many, many years doing work that I thought, was the right work to do. Rarely did it involve any kind of writing.
Yeah.
I had some stints for a PR firm and some time at some ad agencies and stuff like that. And at that time, I really didn't equate the business writing I was doing for them with the kind of writing I wanted to do. So it wasn't until someone told me, well, if you want to do it, you know, if you want to be a writer, you sit down and start. And if you do it, I mean, and then whatever number you have to make up to justify it, that's fine. Mm. So you do it 4 days a week and there you go. You're a writer.
Well, that's awesome.
That's it. And then they went on to say, you know, same thing applies for weightlifting, running, you know, whatever it is, obviously.
But
that was probably kind of on the stuff I really enjoy, the book stuff. That was the moment I went, huh? Oh yeah, it totally makes sense.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I laugh because it's like, it's so obvious, but also like we all struggle with it. And it's like, you just sometimes just need someone to give you permission to do the thing that you want to do. And I don't know why that is. I'm curious if you have thoughts of why is that? Why is it so hard to just say, yeah, I'm this and I'm going to do it. Instead, we like wait for someone to send us on our way or give us a map.
Right. I hopefully I'll be clear and succinct here, but this kind of thing I think about all the time, right?
Yes.
I'll use my, I want to make sure I keep using the first person, not because I think I'm that important, but because I don't want to make it sound like I assume this applies to other
people. Yes, but it probably will.
I mean, there's a, certainly there's the nature and the nurture expectations that happen throughout somebody's life, right? We could go into psychology and start blaming parents for everything and all that. And that's not the point. It's just I think for me, it was this idea of, well, no, it's, you know, you need to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, I need to be successful in all these other metrics that were absorbed externally. They weren't my metrics. They were the ones I heard.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. My friend describes money really well. He says, it won't make you happy, but it makes life easier.
Yes.
So it's not like it's not important. But ultimately, I think it's that outside in, we're hearing that noise.
Yeah.
And we adjust our thoughts to match the expectations of that noise. And I think that's why it took me so long, because it was basically a function of like, actually, I have agency over what I do. And what the hard part with that is, and this is the other reason I think people delay different things they want to do. The hard part about the agency piece is this: now I'm on the hook.
Yes.
And then you go down the road of like, well, I'm scared because what if it sucks?
Yes.
Oh, I'm scared because what, you know, all those different things. And that's why it took me this long. And I also, you know, would be the first one to tell anyone, I don't have some kind of like magic experience when I write something where I feel confident and I know it's going to work. Nor do I have the magic experience of like, oh my God, that's really good.
Yes.
I mean, it just doesn't happen that way for me, right? Like it's I spoke with a woman once who said to me, I was in this big learning group online, right? And we were in this community together and I had responded to a prompt and I said something to the effect of, yeah, it's funny because for me, writing humor and satire is conflicting because I have to be so disciplined to sit down and do it for an hour and a half a day at 5:30 in the morning, because that's the only time I can do it. And it takes so much focus that it's frankly not enjoyable.
Mm.
And someone kind of accidentally took that quote. I had written it down. Someone kind of took it out of context on accident and posted it in this like big forum.
Yeah.
And I remember this woman, I mean, she was like, that is not how creativity works for me. I love, you know, and just, and this was, she's writing back to me, right? And I just said, I mean, I wasn't mad. I wasn't anything. I just said, I literally just said, I am so glad that's how you roll. That's awesome.
Yes.
And then later someone else told her, hey, sorry, I took this out of context. I made it sound like Patrick was like, this is the way it works.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, it's all good, right?
Yeah.
Like, what was cool for me there was to watch this woman who I don't really know, that's how passionate she is about what she does.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not like I could have taken it personally or whatever, but it was just like that energy was great.
Yes.
So that was a big answer to one question. Sorry.
It's a fantastic answer, because again, I think it's just the heart of the dilemma of like wanting something and going after it. And I mean, just so much of it, everything you said just resonates with me. Like, allowing yourself to be on the hook is terrifying. You know, like the more you want something, the more effort you put into it, the less of an excuse you have for the disappointment that you're going to feel disappointed one way or the other.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's not as perfect as it was in your mind, or maybe because it doesn't reach as many people as you hoped, or like, and so it's easier to pursue success, quote unquote, and living out someone else's dream for your life and your career, than it is to like face your demons and sit in a chair and type words that you don't even like because you're not as good of a writer as you wish you were. At least that's my experience, and that's why I barely call myself a writer, because I don't do it enough, you know, because it's too hard.
Yeah.
So what you're saying just totally tracks for me. So thank you for saying it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm curious, like, I think it's, what I hear in that also just like so much permission for people to like just not romanticize the process, like that creativity isn't a magical experience. It's just work. It can be magical. There can be magical moments, and hopefully there's moments of inspiration and moments when it feels really good, but a lot of times you just got to show up. It reminds me of, actually I haven't read Stephen Pressfield's latest book, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
Put your ass where your heart wants to be is the title.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to read it. I know what it's going to say.
Yeah.
It's saying exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's where, and you know, for the record and for full disclosure, things I'm talking about right now, it's all from Seth Godin.
Yes.
You know, those are the workshops I was in.
Yeah.
Pressfield's book. I'm glad you mentioned Pressfield, because it makes me realize this wasn't just something I stumbled upon. Right?
Yeah.
I was dissatisfied and unhappy with what I was doing professionally.
Mm.
And I stopped and I started, I was exposed to things like Seth's blog, Pressfield's book, a host of writers and teachers. And it was by reading that and stopping. If I hadn't have stopped, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I'd be doing something that I would be really unhappy at, and so I just want to throw that out there.
Because
it's wait, I didn't invent all this. I there's people out there trying to help people.
Yeah.
And being able to read that stuff, and being, I just read somebody's quote recently, because I'm a total thief, like all writers, right?
Yes.
Like Steal Like an Artist is a book.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, yep. The recent quote was, curiosity makes you dangerous.
Mm.
And really it just comes down to even a kid in school, right? Like, why beat this kid up for what he's bad at or she's bad at school?
Yeah.
What are they curious about? Because then, boom, you know what I mean? Yes. Doesn't matter what it is. If you're if you're engaged and curious about it, sky's the limit. I mean, there's...
I love it.
You know?
I love it.
So...
Yeah. Well, I, you know, let's give... You know, Pressfield and Seth Godin and their likes, like, credit where credit's due, but also, like, you're the one who took the time to actually take action, right? Like, we're talking about people who are read by millions, if not billions.
Billions, yeah.
And no one does any, like, I mean, people do things with it. They're impacting, you know, they're some of my favorite people to read, but like, it's one thing to read it, and it's another thing to put it in action. And so I also want to make sure you give yourself some credit.
Yeah.
To, like,
all right. Right on.
You're getting in the chair. You're getting in the chair. You're typing the words. You're doing a better job of it than I am. And so I applaud you on that. I'm curious, how do you think of not that we're talking about writing as being like a miserable experience, but like where do you find the motivation? Like when it, because it's not like, oh, just rainbows and butterflies and unicorns. And like, I want to hear about that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I have, so much work, that I actually get paid to do now that I haven't written. I finally had some folks who read, my Substack, and these are like good friends of mine, right? So five people who are like, hey, it's, you haven't written anything in like 5 months.
Yeah.
So, and they all get it, right? Like, oh, you're writing, you're just writing for essentially what amounts to business. And you know, when I'm feeling dramatic, I go, yeah. And it's killing me. Like, I need to find that balance.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, I can tell you that the bandwidth has been gone for about 5 months. So it's a really good question, because now I'm looking at myself going, okay, how do you get back into this? And how do you sit down and do it and find that motivation? And I had this down pat. I had this, I had it so dialed. I just thought it was an intrinsic part of my body, right? It's gone. And you know what it is? it is fully gone. And here's what it is. I sit down at 5:30 in the morning, and I have until about 6:45 a.m.
Yep.
Sometimes it would be 5 a.m. to 6:45 a.m.
Yep.
That was it.
That was
now,
it.
Now, if I was lucky enough, so I'm going to steal another line from yet another person. I think it was Liz Gilbert has this TED Talk or something where she talks about how the Greeks defined genius. And genius wasn't this thing that you walked around with. It lived all over the place. And the moral was, if you don't sit down, genius, you're not even giving it a chance to pay you a visit.
Yes.
And so I haven't sat down at those hours in 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
And so nothing is produced. And as a full caveat, I'm not saying when I did, it was all genius by any means.
Yes.
But that's it. It's like, it's the chunk of time. And I took it for granted. I had it because I did it for so long. I did it for like 2 years, and it was there. And then some stuff changed, and I was like, well, I can get that back. And now it's a little wonky. So I know where to go to get it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I know the chair I have to sit in at 5:22 AM to do my thing.
Yeah.
And that's just me. It could be lunchtime. Obviously it could be 11 o'clock at night for, you know,
and that really resonates with me. And I don't know why it is. And maybe it's just a mind game or excuse I make for myself that, like, It just works best for me in the morning. And if I don't do it in the morning, I get pulled in so many directions between family stuff, work stuff, whatever. It's really hard to get back to like, what do I have to say? And what am I, trying to create? And I mean, like, there's smaller writing things I can do that are more task oriented, but it's just like holding that space. It's easiest for me first thing in the day. I know it works at different times for different people. But what I like about what you just said is like, I asked about motivation and you responded on like the mechanics. Like, it's almost like it's not like, cause you don't, if you know how to do it, then it doesn't, you don't have to force it. I mean, like, you just have to show up. And so it's not a matter of like, oh, I need my motivation to be at 10, 10 out of 10 in order for me to write. It's like, no, I just got to get up at 5 and sit down and get the keyboard out and start going. Which is like, it's a helpful kind of reframing that it's not a question about motivation. It's a question of schedule and time, I think, in some ways. Which is, I don't know, it makes it a little bit easier to think about.
It's within reach. You know what I mean? Basically,
totally.
It's there. Yeah.
I love it. We'll get right back to our conversation, but I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. This episode in this season of the podcast is brought to you by 923.co, a web and mobile app development team that I have been working directly with for more than a year, building VideoSnap. VideoSnap.io, if you don't know, is the software that I built to repurpose long-form speech-based content, like this podcast, into short-form viral-ready videos. Think TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Reels, etc. If you're making content and you want to be found in the algorithms, you should be using VideoSnap. I've been building directly with 923, and they are a phenomenal team with a strong track record of building high quality apps. They've built more than 50 apps. Those apps have gone on to do more than $1 billion for their clients, which is incredible. I'm also now contributing to their team in a product strategy role, which means if you have a dream that you want to realize with software, not only should you talk to 923 because they are so good at software, but I could help you directly build that with them. Go to 923.co, all spelled out, 9-9-E-T-W-O-T-H-R-E-E.co, and find out more. Thanks so much. Now back to the show. Well, I want to hear just more about the transition from your other work into writing, as getting paid to write, because that's big, and that's something that I just want to hear the story, and maybe it's not as magical as from your vantage point as it feels like for mine, but like anytime someone makes a major career pivot, I feel like I need to know, how do you go about doing that, how do you think about that, how did you stay the course, through the middle when you're not sure if it's going to work out? Like, tell me some of that story.
Yeah. I think it helped that I had failed a lot. I think that's legitimately helpful. I told this story to someone recently, and she said to me, I said, that's got to be close to like your top 10, like weird career trajectories. And she was like, no, that's number one. And I was like, really? It was really funny.
I get a prize.
I don't want to take up too much time. So I'm going to try and just give you a timeline as I remember it.
Yes.
I graduated from school. I started to work for a PR firm, did some writing there, obviously. Turned out I hated PR, because I felt like I was lying to everybody, and I was doing retail PR. It's not like I was doing PR for Fred Hutch. My boss was great. There was nothing wrong with the clients or my boss. It just wasn't a good fit. I got invited to sell Christmas trees online in the late 90s. One of those things where if I had kept at it, I'd probably be having this phone call from, Belize or something.
Yes.
We just did it 1 year, and that was it. I worked for my friend's uncle as a maritime courier. I drove around officers, crew, and payroll to merchant vessels all over Puget Sound.
Wow.
So I would deliver $60,000 in cash to a Russian captain and an oil tanker in Port Angeles at 1 a.m.
That's wild.
And then they'd count the money. You'd sit and they'd pour you a vodka. They'd go, here's your vodka. And they're just like, and you know, all captains did, Greek, American, you know. Started a small marketing agency with two friends that failed, worked in coffee for 5 years, pursued the fire service after 9/11, because I remember thinking, what am I doing? Like, this is, you know. I tested with fire departments for about 4 years, never got in. There was even more jobs in between here. I worked at an emergency department. I ended up opening my own coffee business on Queen Anne. That's when I met you years ago.
Yes.
Lost a bunch of money.
Grad school, school work in your coffee shop. Yes.
Yep. So the trajectory is, you know, lose a bunch of money, make it back, start making money. At this point, leases are coming up and all this stuff. And it's been 8 years, you know, over. Sold it, went to work for a beverage startup as a marketing person. So there's some writing in there.
Yeah.
Got invited to work for a CBD beverage startup. Same deal, kind of marketing-ish.
Yeah.
And it was in that time when my friend who owned that business said, this isn't working. You're not happy. I'm not happy with what you're doing. That's when I stopped, because that's probably when I was at my most unhappy.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, you go, okay, there's a pandemic, and I had taken some kind of portfolio classes and the Alt MBA, which is a Seth Godin program.
Yeah.
Long story short is I started writing. I hired myself to write during the pandemic. That was my first job as a writer.
I love that. Hired yourself. What a good way to frame it.
And from that, that led to freelance work.
Yeah.
And this, of course, skips over a bunch of bumps and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, you know, I've read some authors where you read the back of the cover and it says, like, this is obviously not going to be historically accurate. Jane Austen was a lobster fisherman and was in the military, and they list like 20 different things, right?
Yes. Yes.
And I'm always like, ooh, I could have that. I could have that weird, like, what? What did you do? But it certainly made me mentally, and don't get me wrong, I have my moments, but it's like, it made me pretty adaptable mentally. And, I share an office space with two colleagues, and like they always say, hey, the secret is you got to figure it out, right?
Yes.
Like at a certain point you develop the mentality of like, I don't know, I'm going to figure it out.
Yes.
Because there's no, you know, there's nowhere to go. There's no one with all the answers.
No.
And yeah, so that's a very helpful mentality.
I love that. And I couldn't agree more. There is no map. You have to figure it out. I think of that. I'm going to butcher it. Is it like Antonio Mercado? It's a poem. The path is made by walking. I'm looking it up right now. It's in Spanish originally. But it's basically expressing that very, very idea. Like it goes something like the path maker. There is no path. The path is made by walking.
Right.
I'll link to it in the show notes after I find it. But
yeah,
it just is so true. There isn't a map. There's no map for where we're going to go, especially today. You know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, there was more of a defined path.
Yeah.
But I hear some, I don't know. I guess I think of it like hearing your story and hearing your transition, like, and see, like, yeah, that's not a map, but it's like to be able to say, like, okay, Patrick did that. And so then if someone's listening, they're like, I want to be a writer. I want to make money writing. Here's a guy who He took some portfolio classes. He pieced together the writing that he had done, you know, dug it out of internet archives or wherever it lived, and put together a portfolio, and then hired, that really stands out to me, like hired myself to write. Like that, like there's a commitment in there, a commitment to yourself, a commitment to making, to the process of making a path, even though you don't know what the destination is.
Right.
That I think it does, you know, it speaks volumes.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly for anybody who wants to do, to really, you know, do it, it's, there's also a certain amount of, well, what's more important, your resume or a project you did? Mm. And it depends on who you're talking to. I rhyme way more, way less with resume folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way more with, well, show me what you made.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let me see, you know, that's a mindset thing. And some of it's practical, like who cares what I wrote for a PR agency 15 years ago, you know what I mean? It's literally not relevant. Yes. But I think some of the really interesting stuff that happens is when, because I would talk to people and still do, and you know, my resume is insane. It doesn't even make sense, to the point where I finally, after so many years, just wrote the resume I wanted to write. I wasn't trying to please people. I wasn't trying to hit keywords.
Yep.
But it was way, way more, you know, when the resume folks want to see, you know, let me see your resume, and I show it to them, I kind of enjoy it because I kind of get this like, what is this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas show me something you did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. There. And then you can tell by the reaction whether we're in the same wavelength or not. So yeah, there's a lot of juice to that I didn't know was there. I mean, it was only after doing it. You know?
Yeah. And I think that speaks, especially in the creative professions, but I think that there's a lot of places in life where even if you're in a profession or in a field or going into a field that is more resume based, to be able to have something that's more of a project, you know, a portfolio of projects, something that you can point out and say, I, you know, produced this event, wrote this piece, you know, edited this video. Like, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Like to keep track, like that's something I've been thinking about it even in my own life, when all the different things that I'm doing, like I'm always have a bunch of things going on, but I generally don't do a very good job of documenting them. It's like they happen and then they're gone, and then I'm making the next thing, you know. But like then thinking about, okay, let's at least like take some screenshots or something and be able to say, here's what, keep a note on your phone and just write down, like, here's something I did, here's something that I accomplished that I could talk about, you know, in might be applicable to a coming opportunity.
Yeah. It's funny too, because when you were talking, I was thinking about your work right here doing this podcast, right? I don't do that. I don't know it, but I know here's the rhyming part. That's really great. People like us do things like this, right? We're in the same tribe.
Yes.
You know how much work it is. And I don't mean that, like, when you're talking to the right people that you rhyme with, you don't have to go, because I'm like you, I mean, the documentation's terrible, but you don't have to go, here's proof of all this stuff I did. The right person goes, you did what? You do a podcast? Are you serious? Yes. And you do it consistently? Holy smokes. And you're like,
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I do. I mean, and that's, again, like part of it's, you know, the creative struggle of not being very good at talking about myself. I mention it to people who have known me for years. Like, you have a podcast? I'm like, I've had a podcast for like 8 years. Like, this isn't new. So thank you. I appreciate that. It just feels good to be seen.
Yeah, that's right.
One of my frameworks that I wanted to mention to you and just see how it lands with you is when it comes to, and this has emerged from my research and working with clients around ideas of your work and meaning and what's the recipe, you know, that there's four areas of life. And I can't remember if we've talked about this before. Four areas where we find meaning, and work, use in a broad category, and I think you understand that well, that it's using your agency, whether it's paid or whether it's a personal project or whether it's something else. The most meaningful endeavors will have high marks in all four of these categories, which are the people, so the people that you're doing it with, that you're doing it for, the process, which is the actual process of doing the work, which we've talked about that a little bit, the unpleasant sometimes nature of it. The product, so like the goal, the end goal, the mission, if you will, of what you're trying to accomplish, and then the profit. And profit can be, could be dollars, could be lifestyle, could be benefits, could be, whatever else comes back from the work. And I hear, in your life, like you've kind of, it feels like you're checking some of those marks in your personal writing and some of those marks in your freelancing and professional side. But just at a high level, I'm curious your reflections on those four categories, in your life and how you've experienced meaning or lack thereof when viewed through that lens.
Sure. That's a really good question and framework. I think the one that jumps out at me the most, here's the two that jumped out at me.
Yeah.
Profit, seen through the traditional lens of profit, I was going to make my standard self-deprecating joke or jokes of, I sure haven't experienced a lot of that, it's not untrue. Of course, there's different ways to measure profit.
Yes.
But I think the biggest one is the people portion. And that's the... I remember when I owned a coffee shop, I had about a 4-year period where through a tiny bit of my skill at human resources and a lot of luck, I had a really good, tight team. And they were great, great people. Like, all the stuff that I love, like funny, work hard, funny, don't take themselves too seriously, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And then we'd kind of have these people rotating around that would kind of come and go, but it was okay because, the core was there. And that makes a hard lifestyle. I shouldn't say hard, just lots of hours lifestyle, right? Retail.
Yeah.
People would say, you're an entrepreneur. And I'm like, I'm a small business person. I am no entrepreneur. I am just running a small business. But then on the writing side, it can be very, I think one of the reasons that I forget what I wrote fairly quickly is not a memory problem. I think it's because I do it as best as I can, and then it goes out. And what happens after that isn't in my control. The feedback I get, what I do with it is, if I have an opportunity to improve something for, something I wrote for a business.
Yeah.
But certainly, it's not a conflict in terms of, I want people to say how great something is.
Yes.
I want my pride and I want it. None of that. Right. Yes. That's just not my jam. Mm-hmm. However, when someone says to me, well, first of all, if they go, I read your book, I'm like, awesome. I mean, that's step one. But more so than that, like all kidding aside, it's more like, I thought that was funny. And it could be one sentence because somebody's taking the time, their time, whether I know them well or not, to tell me that. Because I'm not walking around going, what do you think? What do you think? And especially the people that I've known, more peripherally, who have said, hey, that really made me stop and think. I was like, it did? Can you remind me of which story it was? Because I can't remember. But so it's almost like that is in a weird way is like, hey, did I just give someone a break?
Yeah.
Did I just cut them a break in their day because they stopped and laughed at something? Right. Yep. And then on the business side, did I just help somebody I like, make a really good pitch to their client? That's the whole jam. That's more worthwhile. And again, to go back to the money side of things, it's important, right? So of course that is that's in there. I don't want to act like I'm like, oh, I'm above worrying about cash flow and money. That's not the case at all. yeah. But one is more, one sticks with you, right?
Yes.
It's that connection piece for sure. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you for that. It's great. Yeah. Great to hear your reflections on it. And it totally resonates with me, like how much just want to make people feel something, just want to give people an experience. You know, I mean, that's what I hope to do in these podcasts when people are listening, that something new will open up inside them as they're hearing us talk about these things. So thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Patrick, I feel like we could go on, you know, geek out on writing, and I feel like those are conversations I want to continue to have with you. I feel like I could use more of you and some good accountability from you, maybe.
Yeah, right on.
But let's save that for offline. But thank you so much for coming on the show. It's just super fun having you. For people who want to connect with you, follow along, read your work, what would you like to invite people to?
Oh well, let's see here. You can buy my book at The Bad Place.
Yes.
Amazon, which is a joke I stole from another writer. And then there's a place called bookshop.org, and they donate. Yeah, they're essentially a nonprofit that supports local bookstores across the country. So
love it. I'll make sure to put links to those in the show notes so people can click on through. Yeah. This has been just so much fun. Always good to connect, and let's do it again soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much for watching and listening. You can find links to everything that we talked about in our show notes at themeaningmovement.com. If you haven't left a rating or review wherever you're watching or listening, please take a moment to do that. On YouTube, you can hit that thumbs up button. On most of the podcast catchers, you can leave some sort of star rating plus a few words. And that is how people find this show. It's particularly helpful on Apple, but you can also do it on Spotify, Amazon, and a bunch of other podcast catchers. Our music is by Tom Rorum. Our artwork is by Eliezer Ruiz. We'll be back with you shortly. Thanks so much.